Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the WOW. This is episode number 30 here for September 23rd, 2024. Mike Agovino here with Woody Overton to talk a little Penn State scandal. Hey, Woody.
Sup, brother? Did you have a good weekend?
I did. I'm in New York. I'm missing Florida. I'm confused. My body doesn't know what state I live in or where I'm from, or I don't know what address to put on things when I buy stuff. I'm so confused. I don't know where my mail's going. It's all so weird. But
there you go. So you're in New York for a wedding, right? Is it your niece's wedding or something?
My niece's wedding, and just to see, I haven't seen my family in a little bit, so this was a good opportunity to get up and see everybody and see mom, who's still cranking along. She's still doing great.
She's still cooking good Italian stuff.
Man, you can't get her out of the kitchen. She's bent over now, you know, she's got some back issues. And so she's at like a 20 degree angle on her back, and I can't get her to relax and sit down. She's still, it's like 30 years ago, and she still wants to feed the whole family and everybody over for Sunday dinner and do all that kind of stuff. And
I go to my dad's every Tuesday. And it's like I'm a kid. Mama's always trying to give me food and all that. But I can imagine your mama cooks some good Italian shit.
Oh, man. So good. So good. And none of the recipes. But my wife has been trying for years to get recipes from my mother. They're in her head. They're not written down anywhere. And she refuses. She won't share anything.
Yeah.
Well, she did share her Christmas cookies. So my wife does have the Christmas cookies.
My mom makes this incredible garlic salad, right? Puts everything in it but the kitchen sink. And Cindy has been trying to duplicate it for 16 years and can't get it. And my mom didn't have a recipe for it. I get it.
It's always one tiny thing. Like, my wife has been trying to copy my mother's banana cream pie forever.
Right.
And I know the second it's this close, it's really close, but it's just off. But that just off piece takes it from being like my favorite dessert ever that my mother made to being good, but not.
Yeah. And then you don't want your wife's feeling, but Cindy knows that she hadn't got it right yet. But she's close. But like you said, it's just not exactly the same. Right. But anyway,
maybe we'll eventually find out the secret ingredients that they're holding back. But okay, it's been a while. So do a little bit of a recap for you folks on where we are. When we last left things off, we were at the very end of the trial in June of 2012. We'd heard from the star witness, who was Brett Hoates, victim number 4, who talked about being attacked sexually over 100 times by Sandusky. We heard from Aaron Fisher, victim number 1, who also spoke of over 100 sexual acts with Sandusky. He did stumble on time frames and at one point claimed that Sandusky had abused him in 2009, which is a year after the grand jury case was opened up. The loss, really, I mean, when it comes down to it, the only chance, I believe, that they had in this trial is if Alan Myers, victim number 2, had followed through on everything he had done in the years before the trial, including, you know, the letters to the papers, the letter to the police, the testimony that he gave to Amendola's investigator. If he would have come in as quote unquote the boy in the shower and told the story that was his story for the first year plus of this odyssey, then maybe there was a chance. But the fact that he was gone, he wasn't there. And remember, the prosecution claimed that they didn't know who he was, that he was known only to God, right? Because that was better than having to get into the story and where he actually was and everything else. And we know that the jury, by their verdict, didn't really buy into Mike McQuarrie's story in the end anyway. But Myers was the only witness that truly could have cast serious doubt on the prosecution's case. And despite Myers' long father-son relationship with Sandusky, he was convinced to sit on the sidelines and wait things out. Ziegler believed, and I'm not sure if he still does, but he believed for a very long time that Meyer's situation was very much like the situation with victim number six, Zach Constance, which is that he had been in what he thought was a really special relationship with Sandusky for years, but became convinced by a combination of lawyers, therapists, et cetera, that Sandusky had built that relationship with him with a different intent, with the intent of abusing him, but for some reason decided not to. And as Woody brought up a few episodes back, maybe the situation with Constance was that Sandusky had already been investigated for potentially having abused Constance. So he was going to stay away from going back there, even though he, you know, maintained his relationship. And in the case of Alan Myers, you know, that was this is the kid he was closest to of anyone that was ever a second miler. I mean, this is someone he was as close to as any of his adopted children. And Sandusky just never believed that Myers was going to be able to go through with this. And I think it led him and it led Amendola to go down some roads they were better off not going down based upon what Myers actually did. The neighbor of Dawn and Aaron Fisher, Josh Frevel, was a witness, but could have been used much more effectively than he was used by Amendola. When you hear Frevel's entire story, which we have extensive interviews with Frevel through these episodes, he not only is there at the moment that Aaron says, Jerry's weird, I don't want to go with him. He puts his arm around me, touches my knee when we're in the car, blah, blah, blah. And then Dawn comes in and makes the, I'm going to own that motherfucker's house comment. Well, Frevel is warned, threatened not to testify directly by Dawn. He later has, after he gives an interview to the New York Times, he has two separate vehicles that are trashed by someone. And so it's a miracle that this guy was willing to testify, period, given the kind of threats he was on. But Amendola didn't ask him any of the right questions. None of that stuff actually even came out in the trial. It's unbelievable. So in the end, the very last hope the defense has is to put Dottie Sandusky on the stand, and Dottie's testimony is a disaster. And it's a disaster because Dottie is unwilling, because of her faith, to label any of these accusers liars. She is asked directly by the prosecution, by Joe McGettigan, whether she knows, you know, why would these victims lie? And her answer is, she doesn't know why they would lie. I mean, it's literally what her answer was.
When you say her fate stopped her from basically challenging the accusers, I don't get that. What can you expound on? I think if I don't get it, other people won't get it. I don't understand what you're
saying. She is so deeply religious that she does not believe in calling anyone a liar. She couldn't do it. So,
we
have interviews with her that are part of these episodes where she explains that to Ziegler. Ziegler actually was able to secure, I mean, think about how hard this is. He secures an interview with her on the Today Show. Matt Lauer comes to State College to interview Dottie. Ziegler does hours and hours of preparation with Dottie. And really, all Dottie has to do is find the internal strength to be willing to challenge the validity, the honesty of these stories from these guys. And she struggles mightily to do it.
So, and she said, it was because of her religious beliefs, because what the layperson is going to take from that is she's so religious that maybe in her head she, you know, thought something was going on, and she wasn't gonna lie herself. See what I'm saying?
Well, you know, the whole thing with her is fascinating, because the evolution of the relationship with Ziegler and Dottie is that Ziegler comes to really dislike her, really blame her for not standing up for her man more strongly than she did. And, you know, he believes part of it is that she loves some of these, quote, grandkids, some of the children of these victims so much, and had done so much babysitting of them and was so involved in their lives for so long, that she was hopeful that that could still continue. She to this day, and Jerry to this day, still believe that this was all part of God's plan, and there's an ending to all of this that is going to make sense at a point in time. I mean, they literally still believe that. Now, if they thought, well, I don't know, you could say, I mean, remember, you have two of these victims that claim Dottie was there, that Dottie was there during these bowl game trips where Houts was, where she walked in on Houts with Jerry, that, you know, she was there all of those nights that Sebastian Payden was getting abused in the not soundproof basement. And, you know, she did nothing about any of that. And so it's, some people look at her as a villain who stood by and knew this was going on and did nothing about it. And, you know, based upon the testimonies and the guilty verdicts against Jerry, it's kind of surprising they never tried to charge her with anything. They never did. As you follow the development of these relationships and who these people are, and look, what's happened with Dottie is still to this day, 10 years later, this woman goes to visit her husband in prison twice a week. They're still that many years later, and Sandusky that many years later, after being offered a sweetheart plea deal where he would, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, have been out of prison already, and he wouldn't take that deal. He forced Alan Myers onto the stand during an appeal hearing. I mean, his actions are certainly consistent with someone who believes in their own innocence and is fighting to try and get to an appeal that he can win, which, you know, seems to be that appeal has to occur on a federal level. It's never going to happen on a state level where he's going to win, because each time they've gotten into court on the state level on appeal, they've gotten certain concessions. There's been a backing off of things, but there'll always be other charges remaining. So I don't know how many of the counts have been vacated through those appeals, but there's a number of them. But there's still a number that exist, and he was given his sentence not based upon the number 45, but based upon being found guilty. So he's still in that 30 to 60 years. So at the very end of the trial, Matt Sandusky, who is an adopted son of the Sanduskys, but he was not adopted by the Sanduskys until he was 18 years old. This was something that he asked the Sanduskys to adopt him, very much for financial reasons, because as an adopted son of Sandusky, he could attend Penn State at a greatly reduced tuition. And, you know, there was an advantage to doing that. Well, he had attended the trial sitting with Dottie Sandusky the first couple of days of the trial. He's told by Jerry that Alan Myers, who is a good friend of his, has quote unquote turned and gone to the other side and is supposedly a witness for the prosecution now. And at some point toward the end of the trial, Matt contacts NBC and approaches NBC saying that he was abused. And that's the reason that Jerry never takes the stand, is because there's a leak through NBC. And remember, this is not a sequestered jury. So that leak sort of goes everywhere. And so the story that Matt Sandusky has now claimed abuse is out there, and Amendola doesn't want to put Sandusky, makes the decision not to put Sandusky on the witness stand. So when it comes to closing,
yeah. I don't understand that, because I mean,
he should have.
Most people don't take the stand. That's just a fact. And that's defense attorneys usually telling them not to. But you know, you got nothing to lose in this case. So your adopted son comes out now during the trial and says, yeah, he raped me all these years too. And so fucking what? If you want to put him on the stand, put him on the stand. He can say he's a liar, just like he's going to say all the rest of them are liars. So I don't understand. Amendola's a fucking...
It's hard to understand, especially knowing that Sandusky wanted to testify. And so preventing him from doing, I mean, it just, Amendola's moves all throughout this trial are, whether it's inexperience, it's fear, it's lack of preparation, whatever it all is combined. I mean, he's just completely outwitted, outmatched at every turn. One of the things that John does in this episode, it's part three of episode 9, is he does his own mock closing argument, where he takes everything that was known at the time. So he doesn't take a bunch of evidence that's come out post 2012. He takes just what would have been available to Amendola if he had used it all to the best advantage of Sandusky. You know, he basically lays it out as, you know, there's no pornography, there's no DNA, there's a victim who claimed anal rape took place over 100 times, yet there's not a single piece of evidence, no stains from underwear, nothing. There's no evidence of how these kids were coaxed to comply. There's no drugs, there's no money, there's no lavish gifts, there's just football tickets to go to some Penn State games. So 13 and 14 year olds are tolerating hundreds of instances of oral and anal sex with Jerry Sandusky just so they can attend Penn State games. Aaron Fisher, Brett Hoate, Sebastian Payton all claimed abuse more than 100 times, yet continued to come to Sandusky's house on weekends. Why would so many of these alleged attacks take place in public places? If Sandusky had some strange kink for doing it in the shower, why wouldn't he choose a private shower? Why would he do it in this huge open locker room at Penn State? There's not a single contemporaneous report by any of these victims. No one at any time told their brother, their sister, a relative, a friend, wrote it in a diary or a journal. Not a single one of the original 8 accusers told police that Sandusky had touched them at all the first time they were interviewed by the police. There's a line that Zig uses in this thing where he says, the absence of evidence is evidence of absence. There's meaning the absence of a crime. The two pillars in the case, the McQueary episode and Aaron Fisher. I think we've talked through the McQueary episode, all the details there. And again, even the jury decided he was incredible. Fisher was the only accuser for more than 2 years. I mean, if this whole thing is true, Fisher's story really has to be true. And if he's lying, then, you know, can't everybody be lying? And, you know, Fisher's story evolved. I mean, it took him 6 months of therapy with Mike Gillum before he said that Sandusky abused him. And so he gave 4 different timelines for his abuse in one testimony. We learn about his stepdad, Eric Daniels, who pled guilty to over 100 counts of child sex abuse, including his own kids. We hear from his ex-wife in an interview that she believes he was abused, but not by Sandusky. by Eric Daniels. And you bring that back and you think about Jessica Dersham's decision as a caseworker to consider the case founded based upon Aaron's behavior, even though he denied that Sandusky had ever touched him. Well, he was an abused kid.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, why are nearly one in three American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that doesn't turn into fat when you consume it. Instead, it turns into a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body.
So getting more MCTs in your diet is like flipping a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which flushes out excess fat and calories. And Dr. Gundry has created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it comes in a tasty drink form. It actually tastes good. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized.
So if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/RLRC and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. And again, that's GundryMD.com/RLRC.
Awesome.
All right, good deal. Do you want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with a subject? Is your child ahead, not getting challenged enough in class? IXL Learning is an online learning program that enriches your homeschool curriculum. It offers practice in math, English, language arts, science, and social studies while adapting to each child, meeting them where they are. Plus, IXL encourages students to be curious and empowers them how to choose to learn. Now, Cindy used IXL in the classroom as a teacher and now uses it to homeschool our youngest son in the 9th grade. The videos are what she finds that benefits him most in math because he's a very visual learner. The perfect supplement to your homeschool curriculum, IXL offers interactive practice problems, educational game lessons, and video tutorials for every topic you're teaching at home. It's easy to use, time-saving, and everything on IXL is organized by grade, subject, topic, and subtopic, making it simple to find activities for the exact skills you're covering. Instant grading, helpful progress reporting. IXL offers instant feedback and explanations of new topics as kids use the program. Flexible and personalized. Kids can explore any topic in any grade level. They aren't forced into a single learning path like they are on other programs. If you're homeschooling your child because they were falling behind or because they were too far ahead, IXL is a great program to help them get the exact support they need. It's fun for kids, and kids love IXL's positive feedback, awards, and educational games. And it's trustworthy. IXL is trusted by 15 million students worldwide and has proven to improve performance in over 75 scientific research studies. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Real Life Real Crime listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
And so she may very well, and Gillum, in the beginning anyway, may very well have been sensing what actually did go on with Eric Daniels and accrediting it towards Sandusky. So as I said, I've said a number of times, and Ziegler says it all the time, just decide which accuser do you believe? Because every one of these stories, when you go through it, there are major holes. There are such inconsistencies. The stories change so much. There's literally no physical evidence of any kind that exists. And the other thing that John talks about when he does this, and this is unbelievable that Amendola did not use this evidence at trial, but the bombshell evidence that John talks about that was literally in Amendola's hands throughout the trial is Jerry Sandusky's medical records. Because his medical records reveal that during the time period that most of these allegations are dated to, that he had some really serious physical problems. He's had extremely low testosterone levels, basically from as far back as you could trace him. He went through treatment for his problems, but Ziegler's not taking the direction that Sandusky couldn't perform sex, even though that's probably likely. Amendola did look at that and could not get an expert who would testify that Sandusky could not have performed any of these acts, even though his testosterone level was so low. They, in conversation, would say that's likely, but really controversial case, the biggest case in the country. None of the experts they talked to was willing to take the stand and make that kind of a statement. But what never occurred to Amendola is really the first thing that occurred to me when I heard about this. So when you go through all of Sandusky's medical reports, they make it very clear that there's a really distinguishing characteristic with Sandusky's genitalia. He has what is called, quote, marked testicular atrophy with virtually no discernible testicular matter. In layman's terms, Sandusky has no balls. Sandusky likely has suffered from this hypogonadism for many years. But think about the testimony that Fisher gave with 100 plus times, Houts gave with 100 plus times, Sebastian Payden gave with 100 plus times, talking about oral sex as a big part of that. Yet none of them ever noticed that Sandusky didn't have any testicles. You're giving oral sex to the guy all of these times, and you never notice. And think about it. If you are a victim of this case, that would prove, I mean, would come darn close to proving that the guy had abused you because you knew about his condition. But Amendola just inexplicably decided not to use Sandusky's medical records. He claimed that he couldn't find that expert that we talked about. Ziegler thinks Amendola never read deeply enough into the report to learn about the hypogonadism and the unique physical characteristics Sandusky had to deal with. And one of the things we know from discussions with Dottie, and again, this is a crazy Dottie thing, is Dottie says, I've only ever seen one man naked. She didn't understand that her husband's physical characteristics were so unique. And Jerry was so embarrassed about his condition and was just under the belief that there was no way that they were going to find him guilty, that some of these victims weren't going to be able to go through with these testimonies, that Alan Myers would not be able to go through with it. So it never comes out.
Ready? Got a couple questions.
Yeah.
All right. So one, it's just, I don't want to say shot across the bow. But one thing is, if he's so embarrassed of his condition, why is he always in a public shower? But we'll pass that. Now, I want you to know, I looked up the information on this, and certainly it has go anywhere from having one testicle, the other one being very, very small. The one they're talking about on here is, so looked at real pictures. Okay, and it's never that your balls are completely gone. The worst picture that I saw, it looks like what I would equate either getting out of really, really cold water when your nuts shrink up, or like a baby's balls. They're still there. They just look like little bumps instead of a nut sack, if that makes any sense. Secondly, as far as the sexual acts goes, it can, in some patients, they have no sperm, okay? But some do. And they would have to check the sperm underneath a microscope to see it. But that into the sexual dysfunction, it says it can cause sexual erectile dysfunction in some, but the patients are normal and will not have sexual function problems since the testosterone hormone will be low to normal. However, the atrophy is bilateral, which his would have been, and the testosterone level is low, there may be an erection problem. Atrophic, or how you say it, testicles also negatively affect people psychologically. As a result, erectile dysfunction can be seen from that because they're embarrassed to perform. So the thing on him not having it, I get it, but I mean, I literally looked up pictures and I was going to ask you, evidently, I did a couple things I wanted to ask you about that. He never had any type of surgery for it, obviously, right? And so I understand, just like what I was telling you about the case in Atlanta ahead of time, the best of the best said this is one way until he got more information. And then he changed it from what he said to, well, now because I have outside information, this could be this, right? I'm not throwing shade on it. During all these testimonies, did they ever talk about ejaculation? The victims?
Not to my knowledge.
Right. And so you don't have to. And I told you, not on this show, but sex is 90% mental. I had an 82-year-old Catholic priest told me he couldn't get an erection anymore, and he still violated the kids. And I mean, he had just applied to work with kids again. He wasn't a priest anymore. He had just applied to work with kids again. And he told me, I fend against them every day in my brain, right? I masturbate, but it's more of a, I'll call it a routine. What do you call that? It's something I used to do, whatever. And he said, I still rub myself, even though I know I'm not going to ejaculate, et cetera. It's part of my act. Not act. It's part of my whatever that I did and been doing for fucking 60 years. You know that? I mean, I get it. He has no balls, or I never found a picture where there were no balls. I found pictures where the balls were like
okay,
this big.
Okay. His doctors, this is their quote, virtually no discernible right. testicular
right.
matter.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. The smallest ones I found, they look like maybe the size of walnuts, but there's something there. You know what I mean? It's not a nut sack hanging and stuff like that. But the smallest I found virtually, if you didn't know what a nut was or a ball was or a testicle, it looks like, to me, it almost looks like the smallest one I found almost looks like a newborn infant's balls. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
No, look, I'm just saying. I'm just saying what I looked up and because I was interested in
it. So we know that he has never gotten any kind of prescriptions, never been on Cialis, never right. been on any kind of ED treatment, right? So, so here's a guy with this long-term low testosterone problem who's not taking some kind of drug for it. And this is all occurring during supposedly his most voracious period, where he's got Aaron Fisher and he's got Brett Holtz And we're talking about, according to them, over 100 encounters. I mean, this guy is, you know, is he would have to have the sexual appetite of, you know, Johnny Wadd. And yet on paper, he sure looks like the guy who couldn't perform. Right.
So let's look real quick on that. So the ED medicine, a Viagra or a Cialis or whatever, it doesn't give you a sex drive. You already have the sex drive in your brain. It helps you get an erection, increases the blood flow to your penis, right? This doesn't. People don't take Viagra and go out and commit rapes because they're super, super horny. You get an erection, right?
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania would consider me an expert witness on this, but I would argue that point where, look, I'm, you know, I pop the pill, right? And I know
that's because you have that, it on your mind. You have to want to pop the pill because you want it.
No, I have the daily. The moment is right from the, you know, I'm not the guy on the swing on the commercial that, you know, when the moment is right, pop the pill on the take it daily. I don't know. Look, when you take the parts, I understand why anybody who looks at the whole of this case goes, there's just too much there. It's got to be true. And when there's that much, who would bother to take all of the parts apart and examine them individually? Only somebody as absolutely crazed as John Ziegler, only somebody as committed as John Ziegler to understand the truth and to examine something from every possible angle. And I think when you look at the individual parts, again, it's the which one do you believe? Every one of these guys tells multiple stories throughout this. And it's not just that they evolve. It's when you look at the settlements and what they told Penn State, which we'll share some of those coming up in their settlement documents, the stories are completely different than what they even said at trial. I mean, there's no consistency to any of these stories. There's no evidence when everybody but those first two came on board. By the time they came on board, it was well understood that there was money in play.
Yeah.
It was well understood that there was money in play. And so, you know, I think if the guy had a real freaking attorney, you know, there are any number of things that could have turned this case around. But what one big one was, if from the get-go he had taken the charges as seriously and urgently as he should have and gotten himself great lawyers, that would have made a huge difference.
I understand that. And definitely stories changed and all that stuff. But and we'll talk about it again. It's on my episode back. I know you could say they were coached, right, for their courtroom testimony, even though they have all these glaring, you know, like the stupid pool shit. I still don't think he did anybody in a public shower. I don't think he's that stupid. But the one thing that is consistent, even though it's not verbatim consistent, is the specific allegations of the little things that he did. They testified to, you know, blowing the raspberries, the whatever that led to this. And I think that by that time, the jury, it could have been Jesus Christ himself sitting there. The jury's pissed off and he was going to get found guilty. You know, I mean, when you hear all this, and certainly Amendola should have done a better job. It didn't matter if he had Johnny Cochran point out all the, you know, basement's not soundproof. 100 times is impossible. It's got testicular atrophy, whatever the fuck. It's the little details that the jurors are impaneled to sit there and listen to and decipher through, and they have to make their own choice. And he got it in this one. You know what I mean?
Right. So look, I mean, I think if I were in State College, Pennsylvania at that time, exposed to everything that had been in the news and everything else and had been put on that jury, I'd have found him guilty. I don't know how you couldn't. And, you know, I think the only, you know, a stronger attorney would have played the whole Alan Myers thing differently. They would have seen what was going on and forced that guy onto the stand.
Yeah.
And forced him to explain why he would deliver that testimony to the investigator, why he would write those letters, why when he was doing that he was lying, and why now this is the truth. And because they knew so much, because that relationship was so close, there were so many things that could have been pointed to that I just think that's where they lost it. Even though the jury didn't believe McQueary, having the actual victim number two there and just holding his feet to the fire on defending the story that was one of the, well, first of all, it was the story that got the grand jury to go forward. So if there was no McQueary thing, there's no case here. I mean, it just wouldn't have happened. They were ready to drop it until that happened. So that's the thing that makes this become a case. And yet the kid is coached into hiding in a cabin and, you know, the most benevolent version, he comes to see this father figure who's been so great to him as maybe great to him, but doing a lot of bad stuff to other people. And he doesn't want to be the one guy defending him. He'll sit on the sidelines. He won't participate. He'll wait. He'll let a jury make a decision. And then if that happens, he'll happily get on the gravy train with everybody else. I mean,
fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Yeah.
That seems like what he did.
America. You got the American flag behind you. And what I want to say is Sandusky owes Amendola, right? And for whatever reason, he thought he wasn't going to get convicted. I mean, thought he wasn't going to get convicted. It was going to be whatever. Now, all the cold cases that I've saw, Mike, it's really not fair. I think about it a lot of times. It's not fair to the cops and shit that I get to come back and look at it with a total fresh eye and with experience and point out what they did wrong, right? And go in a different direction and end up solving these cases. So hopefully on this appeal process, and you're saying it'll have to be at the federal level, which that's pretty much going to be the last level. But I don't know how, if nothing else, if you don't believe, or if you believe he did or didn't do it or whatever, I got fucked on his attorney part. But the problem is the court's going to say, you're an intelligent man. You chose your attorney. That's on you. But maybe some of it will get turned on appeal. Maybe they'll give him a new trial. I don't want an innocent person sitting in prison, but you know, at the end of the day, playing armchair quarterback is what I'm saying. Being able to sit back and in most cases, having more experience than the guys that are working these cases that I solved, it's almost unfair to them. So hopefully Sandusky's innocent. There is. Oh, it's like Zig coming in and doing this case and pointing out all this, 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 and this. But, say even on my end when I do them, I have to be careful of confirmational bias because you get to start believing something so much and you're like, it can't be any other way than this. Well, that's the same way they were feeling about the charges against Sandusky, right? So I have to watch that on my end. But Zig comes in and he absolutely gets one piece and then another piece and another piece. Well, Amendola should have done that shit. Yeah, and hopefully whoever's got his shit down will do it.
Absolutely. Look, there's incompetence of counsel is definitely one piece here, but there's exculpatory evidence that was not delivered. There's the request that were made by counsel that were not granted.
Yeah, we need to go to Justa and look it up and pull the actual appeals. And I hadn't even thought about doing that yet. The actual appeal, and it will list every error that they're bringing up on appeal. Right. And when the lower courts deny it, they'll say we deny this for whatever reason. Justa is J-U-S-T-A, y'all, is one of the most complete things. So you have to know the bad guy's name, right? Or the convict's name. Like in this case, obviously it's going to be Sandusky, but you can look up Justa versus Sandusky. I think if it's gone to the federal level, if it hadn't yet, then look up Sandusky appeal. State of Pennsylvania, and it's a matter of public record. When you file that, you can get it online. You can read what they actually do is they'll go in and give the details of the cases. I'm talking about details, like on or about such date. You know, Joe Blow said that Tom Smith did this, and he came to this house, like almost courtroom testimony worthy. And then this is all. The appeals courts are getting to read. They don't know dick else about the case. I mean, I'm sure they heard of Sandusky, but I'm talking about regular cases. And they read these things, and then it's the full description. And then it comes in and says our client or the plaintiff is stating that the 37 errors were committed during the course of the trial. One may be a Brady violation. One may be voir dire. One may be whatever, not enough money for expert witnesses, whatever it may be. And they're going to go by each one. And then the court's going to answer each one and say, we deny this. We affirm the court's decision. We deny it. And they'll give the reason. So it'd be interesting to see what they say and why it's got to go to the federal
level. Well, I've seen that list, and it is that kind of length. It's that it gets into that. Those kind of numbers, but
Zig did it this much. I mean, look, lawyers like anybody else, they're gonna try to, I don't want to say they're gonna do the least amount of work they could do, but they certainly they go get Zig shit that all of the work that he's already done it all for the appeals process, basically, and go through and have that done, and then here's your list, boom. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, it will. And if he can ever get it, and the fact that there was a federal investigation and that federal investigation found exactly the opposite of what the state investigation found, getting this into a federal venue where the NCIS investigation can come into evidence.
That's the problem, though, Mike, and that's a misconception. I should have stated that to you. The courts are very harsh on what they will allow in as new evidence or shit that was missed or incompetency or whatever. Sometimes I'm like, ooh, that could be close. And they're like, this is not enough evidence to have swayed a jury. This is not enough evidence to restart whatever. So I'd be curious to see if they do that. But I don't even think they're going to allow that report in because it was done and it was never admitted into the. You can only appeal what was in the trial, right? Or there's something that's left out, like Brady violation, like the DA didn't give them whatever X, Y, Z documents. You can appeal that, but you can't appeal. You just can't come in and bring in shit from left field. That's exculpatory. They're going to try. No doubt about it. I'd be very, very shocked if that free report gets in. The Snedden report.
You can bring evidence in that materializes after the trial, correct?
It's got to be something that's like glaring, like new video evidence or something. I mean, I'm only telling you because I disagree with some of the stuff. And on the evidence part, you would be shocked at what they don't allow in. Like, you'd think any reasonable person would allow this in. And they're like, I'm talking like fucking death penalty cases even. And where people are doing their appeals for their life, right? And you'd be like, that probably seems reasonable to me that you would want that in trial. And they don't allow it in for whatever reason. But whatever the reason is, they're going to state it. So we're not allowing this because of this, right? And that's the court's decision. I mean, that's the way it rolls. So but that would be very
interesting. Something that seems so crazy to me, I don't know if this is true in a bunch of places or it's unique to Pennsylvania, but the trial judge, was the appeal judge. And the number of the things they're appealing are things he did. So you're asking him to cast judgment on decisions he made on appeal.
Yeah. Most of the appeals courts are not, at least in Louisiana, it's not just one judge that reads it. On these levels, it's like 3 to 5 judges or whatever it is. And so he may have been on there and maybe he should have taken himself off for the reading. He recused himself,
either the second or the third appeal, but not. Yeah. Not originally, but anyway,
I'd be surprised if it wasn't more than just him reading it. And then I guess when the appeals kept coming, he's like, I should get off of this. And he should have, he should have never ruled on it anyway. I agree with that.
Well, good discussion. Trial's over. Yeah. The next thing that happens is this release of the free report that happens in July that exonerates the Board of Trustees for the terminations of Spanier and Curley and Schultz and Paterno, and then we go toward the sentencing, and really that's where Ziegler. That's about the time period that Ziegler actually gets pulled into this case, and we've got some amazing interviews, some amazing. Well, we won't show the video, but one particular portion involves a guy who was a long-term second mile participant who just refused to believe, based upon his experience, that any of this was true. And so he decides on his own to go undercover and to approach the attorney, that local attorney, Andrew Shubin, with a crazy story about being abused by Jerry Sandusky. And this guy's recording every conversation. And we will get to see firsthand how the attorneys manipulated kids, how the therapists manipulated them, how what ends up happening with this guy is unbelievable. He actually gets to the point where he gets an interview with the board member who made the determination about what to pay each of these victims. And people are going to find that conversation fascinating. And so look forward to sharing that in the next time we're together.
Cool. Looking forward to it. And I appreciate it as always. Right.
You too, bud. Enjoy the rest of the week. We will talk at you soon.
Will do, brother. Peace.
Aglets. Thank you.